All right, we're going to go ahead and get started here. First, I'd like to introduce the pages that are working with us today. Cecilia Best from Albertson by Senator Albertson. We got that straight yesterday, I think, didn't we? Sean Greer from High Point, Senator Berger. Back there, all right. Lauren Broadwell from Wendell, Senator Rausser. David Ojo from Federal, Senator Dixon. Hallie Wachacher from Elizabethtown, Senator Dixon. Courtney Spate from Fremont, Senator Swindell. Is that part of Nash County?
Yes, sir.
Sam Freeman from Wilkes-Barre, Senator Goss. Phil Hendricks from Greensboro, Senator Vaughn. We're going to start with Senate Bill 1209, non-vote local debt, Senator Hoyle. There is a political.
PCS. Yes, a political thing.
It is a PCS. I have a motion to consider the PCS. Hoyle moves second. All in favor say aye. Go ahead, Senator Hoyle.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee. First of all, I'd like to just briefly go through a few thoughts and tell you the genesis of my concerns about broadband, cable, TV, and telephone services being offered by our cities. It's purely philosophical on my part. I just don't believe and held beliefs for many, many years that government at any level should unfairly compete with the private sector in our free enterprise system. And the very people that pay the taxes that we use to pay the bills are the ones that would be affected by uncontrolled competition on an unlevel playing field from our cities. And now I'm told, I've heard, there's bills been introduced in the House that would allow the counties to jump on the bandwagon. Now let me say that I have the highest regard and respect and admiration for the mayors of our cities throughout this state, those who are contemplating getting into this business, those who are in this business, and others. You have a tough job, and you serve with distinction, and you serve with honor. But for information purposes only, some people may not know this, 44 years ago, I was elected mayor of Dallas, North Carolina. And I served a couple of terms, retired on my own volition. But an instance happened at that time when I was mayor, and that was when the Electric Cities organization sued our investor-owned utilities in North Carolina to require them, to allow them to get into the electric generation business. Dallas is an electric city. But we didn't allow, myself as mayor and my council, said we're not going to try to compete with people who are professionals. We're not going to sue the biggest taxpayer that we have in our town. We're going to take our own chances. And I think about 12 or 15, maybe 20 other cities took that same position. But if anybody thinks that the experiment with electric cities was a great idea and has been a resounding success, I'd like for you to raise your hand. Because a few years ago, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, when the federal government was looking at deregulating electricity, had that happened, in North Carolina, we drug our feet just long enough. But had that happened, the electric cities would have been bankrupt. They had $6.5 billion in debt and $2.5 billion worth of assets. That is not a good scenario. In the private sector, that's Chapter 11 or maybe Chapter 7. But unfair competition is just something that we should not condone. Cities don't pay income taxes, they don't pay franchise taxes, they don't pay property taxes, they don't pay sales taxes, they don't pay highway use taxes, they don't pay gas taxes. They don't pay fees for rights of way. They don't pay poll taxes to hook the lines onto. Now, what kind of competition is fair when one provider of the same type of services has that advantage over somebody else? In 1929, the state of North Carolina passed a law, statute, on the statute, known as the Umstead Act. And what the Umstead Act basically says is this, that the state of North Carolina will not compete with the private sector, with private enterprise, but we did not make it apply to cities and counties. Maybe it should have been. And we have carefully exempted some enterprises from the Umstead Act. For instance, the prison enterprises are exempted. And the inmates can make their own clothes, make their own furniture, grow some of their own food, make our license plates. We've exempted university systems. We've exempted the museums, state fair. The list is fairly long, but it's very carefully crafted so that we do not violate the principles of the Umstead Act and do not unfairly compete with our private enterprise people. And I think this has served our state well. North Carolina is known internationally as a business-friendly state, and we certainly need to keep it that way. And somebody, and maybe hopefully a lot of bodies, have got to stand up for our free enterprise system. And that's where I am today with this bill. Now, where is the free enterprise system, and what has it been doing for the state through the years? There's a 21-member group of companies that are in the cable, telephone, and broadband business. They have invested in this state over $12 billion in infrastructure. They pay $427 million in taxes a year. Their payroll is approximately $997 million, a billion-dollar payroll. 4.5 million access lines, 1.3 million miles of fiber circuit. 17,400 North Carolina tax-paying employees. And additionally, in addition, these companies, these for-profit companies, these tax-paying companies, contribute to many, many, many community programs, things that are important to all of us. They give millions of dollars a year to the United Way, the Junior Achievement, to the Scouts, to the Leadership Program, Fire Rescue, Boys and Girls Clubs. Do they need a level playing field? Do they need to be treated fairly as they face competition? I think the answer is yes. Now, initially we put a bill in that was a moratorium bill, and everybody got a lot of flack. Then we said, okay, we'll do a level playing field. That didn't set very well either. The idea to make it a general obligation bond, if cities were going to go into hundreds of millions of dollars in debt, it ought to be a vote of the people. That was not well liked either. But I can tell you that there's at least a couple of cities. There are five cities in the state that are in this business, and we're going to allow them to continue the committee substitute that we've got. And I'll get into that explanation in a minute. But there's a couple of cities that's in this business that they sure wish the heck they were not into. And that's Davidson and Mooresville. Davidson's and Mooresville together paid $92 million for MI Communications. It was an old bankrupt, the Delphi system, the Regas brothers or family in Philadelphia that stole all the money and bankrupted the company. They bought it out of bankruptcy, paid $92 million. I'm told by supposed experts that it's worth about $30. The first quarter's operating loss was $1.7 million, the first quarter. Multiply that times four, you got six and a half plus. Davidson's share is $2 million. Their total town budget's $7 million. Is that a problem? I got a call from a gentleman yesterday, Mayor Klutz, from Salisbury, and I mean, he laid me out. He called me dumb. I had no idea. A general obligation bond was not something that was a cure-all, that we shouldn't do general obligation bonds. We ought to do issue COPs and do revenue bonds, because if they default on those, all the city's got to do is just give the key back and walk away. And there's no risk to the state. There's no risk to the cities. No risk to the taxpayer. No risk at all. Just real simply give it back to the bondholders. Well, folks, it just don't work that way. Just as the state of North Carolina would not have allowed our electric cities to go bankrupt, we're not going to allow one of our subdivisions to default on a bond issuance, whether it be COPs, GOs, or whatever. We're not going to do that. But we need to address this issue. It needs to be addressed now. And what this committee substitute does, and there was, I hope, well, it's got to be a good bill because neither side likes it. And I'm not particularly fond of it myself. But this is what the bill says we're going to do. We're going to direct, and you all have got copies of it, and I won't read it all to you. We're going to direct revenue laws to study this issue to begin in 2009, this year, and they will report their findings by March the 1st, 2011, a little over a year from now. They're going to determine the following. There's four things you see there. The extent to which current law authorizes units of local government to offer communication service not traditionally thought of as cable television services. I hope we're going to clean up the statutes that Senator Klobfelter brought to our attention in this discussion in revenue laws. The second thing, the requirements and standards that should apply to a unit of local government and to a private provider when the local unit offers a communication service that is offered by a private provider. Third thing we're going to look at is whether varying or different provisions are needed to accommodate communication systems placed in service by cities before the effective date of this act. And fourth, policies and incentives that can be established to facilitate the offering and expansion of communication service by both public and private service providers, including, and this is important, public-private ventures and other opportunities. I believe public-private partnerships may be one of the solutions to this problem that I see us having before us today. They're going to appoint co-chairs of Revenue Law Study Commission will appoint a subcommittee of 12 members. They will include, you see the list there, all sides are going to be represented. The League, cable service provider, et cetera, et cetera. I won't read all those to you. The League of Municipalities will have a member. The North Carolina Local Government Commission will have a seat on the subcommittee. We talk a little bit about interim financing provisions. We are excluding the five cities that are previously engaged in this business. We're going to more or less put a moratorium. We're going to tell the Local Government Commission that they cannot approve any application for COPS financing until at least the effective date of a bill recommended to the 2011 a regular session. If their unit of local government has, as of June the 1st, had previously entered to a contract to finance a communication system by COPS that provides a consumer internet service retail, they are exempted from this bill. And also, it makes some other exemptions. I think we're told there are a couple other cities that are rushing to get into this wonderful business where they're going to all get rich and take everybody's property taxes to zero, that they can do it if they have on or before December 1st taken formal action or reflected in the minutes of the city council meeting to instruct city staff to file an application with the local government commission to approve a contract by the city to finance a communication that provides consumer internet service. if any of these cities could receive a federal grant that they need to put matching money with, they will be allowed to do that under this bill. And also, we've heard this talk about Google going to completely fiber opt and fiber install and do all the things they're going to do for certain cities. If Google comes along, we welcome them. They do what they want to do under this bill. They'll be totally free to totally fiber project any city in the state. So that's basically what the bill does, Mr. Chairman. I'll be glad to try to answer any questions.
All right, Senator Kleinfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I said at the last meeting of the Revenue Law Study Committee, expressed my frustration about how difficult it has been to have calm and orderly discussion of this issue because of all the noise. And everyone wanting to go ahead and jump all the way to the end point before they explored any of the issues along the way. I think what the bill, this version, does is allow us to have that kind of calm and orderly exploration of the issue in an environment where hopefully the noise level will not be so loud that you can't hear yourself talk. We have, for every kind of public service that local governments now offer, we have a framework in the statutes under which they provide that service. We've had it for 100 years. It's not new. It's not radical to want to talk about what is the framework within which this gets done. That's the way it's done for water, which is every bit as essential as broadband. If you doubt me, try going without it. It's true for electricity. It's true for everything. And so to say that what we need is a framework under which local governments will enter this enterprise operation, like all others, I submit is simply good, rational policymaking. But it's been very hard to talk about that. We're in the situation, as I said, at Revenue Law Study Committee, because a court decision decided that our statutes actually said something other than what they actually say. And so now we have folks looking at this enterprise service with no framework in place except the one that's supposed to govern something completely different, cable television. This is not cable television. It may be offered by the same people who offer cable television service, but it's not the same service. The incidents of the service are different, and we have no laws to govern it. We have laws now on the books that talk about rates for water and sewer service and rates for solid waste service and how those are set and who sets them and how you have public hearings on that before they change those rates. We have nothing on the books about broadband. Nothing. We have rules about how you provide a duty of service to your citizens when you're offering a public transportation system or electricity system or any of that. What is your duty to serve? We have nothing on the books right now for broadband. And I could go on and on and on through all the things that our statutes do address about every other public service that local governments provide, and we have nothing. There are no rules of the road. That's not tolerable. It's not tolerable for the folks who want to offer the service, and it's not tolerable for the folks in the private sector who compete with those who want to offer the service. So what the bill does is give us a chance to put in place a proper statutory framework. Mr. Chairman, my frustration is that I don't really know how it should come out. Senator Hoyle, I'm not sure where it comes out in terms of your view of the world or philosophy, but I do know there needs to be a good conversation among the contending parties before we can get there and decide what those rules ought to be. What the bill does is facilitate that. Mr. Chairman, with Senator Hoyle's blessing, I injected myself in the middle of this bill because of my frustration. And I want to thank the folks who over the last week have worked very hard have met with each other face to face and talked to each other probably for the first time in a long time about this issue. They've talked to each other face to face in the same room in a civil atmosphere. I've made sure that happened, and I want to thank them for doing it. I want to thank the representatives of the municipalities, particularly under the leadership of the League of Municipalities, and representatives of a number of cities who have been involved in those discussions, representatives of the private service providers who have been involved in those discussions, and they have worked very hard to build some trust to allow themselves to have a rational conversation about what the rules of the road ought to be. This is not, I would say to you, a peace treaty. It is an armistice. And what the bill does is provide an armistice so that the shooting war stops and a conversation will occur among those people who have been meeting with each other in those conference rooms for the last week. So I hope you will pass the bill and give that opportunity to go forward. There are definite end dates for this. There has to be a formal report with proposed legislation coming out of this task force by next March. And if there's no successful resolution to that, then we come right back to the state of affairs we are in right now today. And all those of you who are going to be here next year, whoever you are, will then have to deal with this all over again. My hope is, based upon the progress of the last week or so, and watching the conversations that have occurred, my hope is that there will be an agreed piece of legislation about local government involvement in high-speed internet service, and more importantly, about ways in which the private sector and the public sector can work together to enhance getting that service deployed and expanded across the state. So, again, my main message is thank you in the audience. I'm not going to name any individual names, but you all know who you are. There's sometimes as many as 15 or 20 people sitting in that conference room. Thank you all, because I think you you did the grown-up thing, and I really appreciate it.
Senator Queen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say a few words about my personal frustration with broadband rollout in North Carolina. I've been a senator since 2002, and certainly in the mountain areas, we don't have last mile to most of our citizens. We heard from Ed Oversight of the rollout for our one-on-one laptop to every student programs that we have about 15 LEAs participating in. And they had about, they reported they had about 82%, I believe, of their students had broadband at home. But when you ask the next question, well, what sort of broadband did they have, 75% of those just had to dial up, which most of us who have either used the broadband internet services or our children do or know that that's not a very adequate service penetration. So that's just a good indicator of just this spring what the rollout has been for the average folks in our state. So we need to be very mindful as we go forward on slowing down the rollout or putting impediments to competition or whatever. I don't know what it is, but I have been frustrated by the fact that it's not happened. It seems to be quite possible everywhere, but it just doesn't happen. So the private sector is not getting it done fast enough for my taste. So I've been very heartened by the national broadband plan with the FCC has put out, and it points out that it's very important to keep an open playing field, to ensure robust competition, upgrades, and a competitive entry into this area, and really to bring access to everybody, because it really is about opportunities for educational opportunities. We have so many educational opportunities that are virtual online opportunities that a lot of our children can't take part of. We've had a discussion earlier this morning on the school calendar. If we had broadband rolled out everywhere in the mountains, we could have virtual school on a snow day and protect our calendar and give options to our kids. Healthcare is huge. Billions of dollars can be saved by internet healthcare. So broadband's important, and I just want us to keep in mind that we don't need to put impediments and be cautious of those impediments. If they're the case, be sure we're greasing the wheels and not slowing the process down. So, again, I appreciate your indulgence and hope that this will go forward with the idea that North Carolina protects the interests of its citizens in this incredible important infrastructure of the future. It should be universal like water and electricity, in my opinion. And the sooner we can get there, the better.
Thank you. Senator Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Hall, I want to thank you for coming forward with this compromise bill. I know it's been very difficult, and I appreciate that very much. But I'd like to make just a few comments about the other side of the story, especially related to electric cities. I also was a mayor of a small town for five terms, a city that was an electric city. And I can take you to Laurinburg and show you where the generating plant was that the city of Laurinburg built to provide electricity for its citizens when the big companies would not bring electricity to us. And so electric cities were formed in many instances because there was no service available to the people, and that was true in Laurinburg, and I'm sure it's true in a number of the other electric cities. And the question I want to ask you is, what assurance do we have that the big companies supplying cable services will not overlook the small, less profitable markets in the small cities in North Carolina?
Well, I guess, Senator Purcell, for the same reason that probably even some of the small cities probably couldn't afford to get into the business. How much does it cost? What kind of return can the city get out of it versus a privately held company? Back to Senator Queen's situation. I mean, we're not going to get broadband to everybody in this state anytime soon. The electric cities, as I said, my town, Dallas, was electric because back in the late 1800s, the IOUs, investor-owned utilities, just couldn't afford, they didn't have the resource, they couldn't borrow the money to run the lines. So therefore, electric cities were born, so were co-ops. And they got money from the federal government, from the Department of Agriculture, to do that. So if those kind of resources are available to the smaller communities, that this bill would certainly allow that to happen. But I would think that you're in Laurinburg now. Do you not have telephone service and cable TV service and broadband service in Laurinburg now?
We do have in some areas, but not right around the city at this time. We put a cable in, the city did, a broadband some many years ago when I was mayor, to essential areas like City Hall, the Public Works, the county complex, the school system. So we've already done that. The city did that with its own funds.
Even the GO bond bill that we had allowed the cities to do that and to continue to do that. This has nothing to do with intergovernmental operations, law enforcement, fire protection, all those kind of things. This has nothing to do with that. Cities can continue to do that at their will.
Mr. Chairman, if I may say one other thing. I just hope that in the end that we do keep small rural communities in mind and that they need the broadband just as much as larger cities do.
Duly noted. Senator Ruscio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't care what they said, Senator Hill. You are not dumb. Pretty, yeah.
You want to take a vote on that?
Is there a second to that motion, or is it all for that lack of a second?
A question of, and I understand what Senator Queen and Senator Purcell say about having availability of services, but can you explain why the local government commission allowed that to proceed forward in those two towns that accumulated at least $80 to $90 million worth of debt on a project that was only worth $30 million? And how come that didn't get stopped, or is there no laws that allow that, the local commission, not to allow that kind of activity, which puts that municipality and the state ultimately in what would be financial peril?
I think there were four cities originally, towns, that were going to buy the old MI, I believe is what they call MI Connection. Huntersville, Cornelius, Davidson, and Mooresville. They got so far, I believe, Senator Ruscio, down the road, and Huntersville and Cornelius pulled out. They wised up and said, wait a minute. So I think maybe because there were investments already made, studies, maybe earnest money up. And I think the local government commission obviously looked at the balance sheets of Mooresville and Davidson and said, you know, and we had a consultant preparing all the pretty documents for them and showing them the pretty nice pro formas and showing them how much money they made, but it didn't work out that way. So, I mean, I think, is Vance Holloman here with the local government commission? I don't blame him. I wouldn't have been here either. I don't know, Senator Russo, the total answer. I do know that Salisbury has had to pledge additional resources that they have to finance their first entry into the COPS issuance just to get their system up and going. They didn't just put up the system. They put up some additional collateral, according to local government commission's statement to me yesterday.
Yeah, follow up, Mr. Chairman. I guess at some point we do need to find some laws that would allow the local government commission to act responsibly before they allowed some communities to act irrationally for the sake of getting some extra revenue, because it puts a lot of us at risk, and something that we need to be protective of.
Well, the local government commission will have a representative on our subcommittee study, and I'm sure those kinds of questions will be asked at that time. Senator McKesson.
Yes. It's my understanding the League of Cities as well as Association of Counties are behind the compromise that's set forth in this bill. Is that correct?
The county commissioners were never involved. Under the statutes today, the counties are not allowed to get into this business. The cities are.
Were they involved in any of the
cities were very actively involved. Again, as I said, I don't think the cities are totally happy with this. Neither are the providers, the companies that are in the business. But they believe this is a compromise, and this is the way to go to get some resolutions to the issue about competition, a level playing field, who should get in the business, who should not get in the business, and all the whys. So I've been told that the league and the free enterprise folks who are behind this, obviously, are declared a moratorium among themselves, that they want the bill to go forward. It will not be opposed, and that we can enact it and get revenue laws to work on as soon as we adjourn.
Quick follow-up. Simply this. It's my understanding from reviewing this bill that if no action is taken by the end of the 2011 General Assembly, that the moratorium set forth in this bill will automatically end and sunset at that time.
I think that's correct.
And I'm looking at Section 3A.
Yeah, bottom. If we don't get, you know, by 2000, by the long
session. So if nothing gets done, it sunsets automatically.
That's the way I understand.
With that said, I'll go ahead and move for a favorable report.
All right, we have a favorable report for proposed committee substitute Senate Bill 1209. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. All right, thank you very much, Senator Hall. Senate Bill 1298, Town of Pembroke Occupancy Tax, Senator Walters. This is a good bill. Anybody opposed to it?
Move for a favorable report.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Senate Bill 1331, allow wheel locks in the City of Federal. Anybody opposed to that? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. Thank you very much.